From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made in the 2012 presidential election. Mitt Romney would have won the White House easily if only no one between the ages of 18 and 29 had voted. President Barack Obama dominated the so-called youth vote once again, winning that category 67% to 30%. Young voters provided the decisive edge in swing states like Florida, Pennsylvania, Ohio. Democrats have been counting on younger voters, especially with the congressional midterms coming up. That's why some are concerned about a new poll from Reuters Ipsos. The poll finds that Democrats are losing ground with millennial voters, age 18 to 34. Support for Democrats has fallen from 55% to 46%. Republican support has stayed at 28% in that cohort. Now, a spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee celebrated the poll, saying it's a sign that the political left is losing its grip on young voters. Is that true? This hour, let's have a conversation about what millennials have already killed: voicemail, sitcoms, work ethic, depending. I'm kidding. That's obvious. I read the memes. They're not fair. But are Democrats in the sight of millennials? Is the Democratic Party going to be added to that list of things that millennials have murdered? I don't know. We're going to talk about it this hour with a group of young active voters. Alex Hippolito is a legislative assistant to Assemblymember Harry Bronson. Alex, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Carolyn Hoffman's here, political strategist. She's with the steering committee for Surge Rock, that's Standing Up for Racial Justice. Also with Rock Citizen, the Rock DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America. Thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for having me.
Nick Nevinger's here. We pulled Nick right off of the pages of Twitter yesterday. We thought he had a lot of thoughtful things to say on it. And he's an actor, among other things. Fair enough.
Among other things, yeah.
Yeah, nice to have you.
Thanks
for being here. Jessica Fleming is a human services professional. Jessica, thanks for taking the time for us this hour.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to go around the table and just ask, generally speaking, what our panel starts by thinking of the poll itself. The Reuters Ipsos poll, they polled 16,000 people, pretty large sample size. They did not find Republicans surging. They found the Democratic Party is less attractive to young voters than just a year or two ago. And Alex, as someone who works hard for the Democratic Party, I wonder what you make of that.
Well, I think the first thing to consider is that this poll was of registered voters, not likely voters. So I think as the RNC chairwoman would try to spin this is a boon to Republicans moving forward. The poll first, it showed the Republican support isn't growing. It's not voters leaving the Democratic Party and going towards the Republican Party. It's voters deciding that they're not identifying with a party. They're joining a third party. They're being more party agnostic. And because these are registered voters rather than likely voters, I think the impact of this poll, it's not necessarily heralding the doom of the Democratic Party in terms of the upcoming elections.
Okay. And this is going to be an anecdotal question. We want to be very careful with this because in these kinds of conversations, I do prefer data. But I will ask you anecdotally, do people in your age cohort, are they less likely to firmly grab onto a political party?
I think it's hard to make that generalization about people in my age group. I have a lot of friends who are teachers and who are very active with their unions, and so they've been participating in the last couple of elections. I have other friends that look at both parties as two sides of the same coin. They're both part of the problem and don't really feel the difference, or neither party inspires them to participate in elections. And I also have other family members and friends that are conservative in my age group. So I think my overriding point of emphasis on this is it's easy to look at millennials as a solitary block, but just like any other generation, we being, people 18 to 34, there's a diversity of thought, a diversity of opinions, and a diversity of values. So I think it's important that we resist trying to identify what is good for all millennials or what will win all millennials to the party by trying to prescribe broad-based policies or solutions.
I think that's wise, and I think as we go throughout the hour, Alex's words are going to ring true there. I don't want to overly focus on, so what do young voters want? Because that's a hugely diverse group of voters, and it's a very difficult question to answer, even person to person. I do think it's fair to ask, why are younger voters turned off by party politics? And I'll turn to Carolyn Hoffman. Any surprise to you that to see the Democratic Party losing 9 percentage points among younger voters?
Excuse me. Well, honestly, Evan, millennials didn't create political parties. And so there's the push to sort of join them, I think, it can be tricky to sell. But the other thing, as far as Democrat millennials losing interest in Democrats, as I kind of dug into the numbers and specifics with this poll, it's a poll that was taken during the first 3 months of 2016 and during the first 3 months of 2018. So if you look at what was going on during the first 3 months of 2016, that was sort of the peak of Bernie Sanders' popularity. And so it makes sense to me that there might have been some more Democratic sentiment among young people during that time, as Bernie was very popular with young people. And then I also think we've seen a rise in white nationalism since Donald Trump has been elected, and even among young, especially among young white men. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I agree with Alex that mostly what this poll shows is a lack of party loyalty. But one of the areas when I looked at it more closely where it did show that Republicans had gained ground is with white male voters between the ages of 18 to 34. And so I've seen a huge push towards that demographic of this sort of white nationalism, this sort of what about us and what about our rights type of stuff that can be very tricky as a young person to sort of sift through. And so those are the things that jumped out to me with the poll.
I think that's a really important observation. So let me just read more to sort of flesh out some of what Carolyn was just saying. There's a racial and gender split here. 2 years ago, young white people favored Democrats over Republicans for Congress by a margin of 47% to 33%. This year, it's 39-39. The shift is especially dramatic among young white men. 2 years ago, young white men favored Democrats, but now they say they favor Republicans over Democrats 46-37. And to Carolyn's point, just observationally, if you take a look at who the followers of people like Jordan Peterson are, you know, some of these writers and figures who are espousing ideas that aren't necessarily alt-right, but some are, or white nationalists, but some avowedly are. There's mainly young white men marching in lockstep with the Jordan Petersons of the world. And I think to that end, Carolyn, that lines up. And do you have any sort of thoughts about that?
I
mean, is it concerning or interesting to you in 2 years that we've seen that shift?
I do. I think that millennials are facing poverty in greater numbers than any generation before us. And so I think there's an economic populism that is very attractive to millennial voters. I have friends who don't turn their heat on in the winter so they can pay their rent, or they don't eat so they can pay their rent. And so I think, again, where Bernie was strong, I think Trump unfortunately picked up some of those signals and sent this message of economic populism. And I think the Republican Party, whether it's fair or not, has focused on that, especially with young white men, and said, like, hey, you don't have jobs and you're not making a living wage, and that's other people's fault, and sort of focusing on racial or other differences, religious differences, and having people kind of blame each other instead of centering class and really putting the blame back where it belongs, which is where I believe on the wealthier, the ruling class. So does that help?
Yeah, I think so. Jessica Fleming, I'll turn to you. Your initial thoughts on the poll.
Picking back on what the two other visitors have said, I think that in general, not just young people, but progressives in general are starting to lose interest in the Democratic Party because what is being represented in platform and what is being accomplished, there's such a difference between the two. And in 2016, when Bernie did not win the nomination, I think that in general, maybe women and people of color who were disappointed with that are less likely to not vote or choose a different party affiliation than maybe a progressive white male who might feel they don't have as much to lose by not voting for the lesser of two evils.
Okay. Nick Nevinger, what do you think?
Well, let's get one thing straight. I'd like to push back on the idea that Jordan Peterson is the example you used, that the racism you see in my demographic, the young white guys, that has nothing to do with economic anxiety at all. I don't buy it. I'm not wealthy. I've done okay. Everyone I know who is in the same demographic is in, generally speaking, the same boat. And I know people who have been avid I don't really, I mean, they call them alt-right, I guess, so I'll use that term even though I don't really, they don't like it. I'll use that. I know plenty of those people. I went to a Christian school growing up. I was surrounded with people who either were that or, you know, were right on the cusp where that's you know, the alt-right's, well, I guess their demographic. That's the word for it. And these people were not poor. They didn't have to struggle for anything. Most of them at the time, they were my age, so they didn't have to worry about things like paying bills. We're the age now where we have to worry about that. But this started before then. I know these people. You mentioned Jordan Peterson. There's a bunch of others that are more insidious. I know he's a professor, right? He's not exactly like a like an internet hate monger. I don't like him, but he's not that bad. There are people who are that bad, and the people that I grew up with, they went to sites like the 4chan kind of boards mm-hmm. where this mm-hmm. stuff kind of grows like bacteria and it's disgusting. This he was there, the people I know were there from like 12 when they didn't have to worry about anything anxiety-wise, pain. I think the Bernie Sanders crowd has placed kind of the economic excuse there. I'm sure they believe it, but I think they've put it there so that they can still kind of try and attract those voters instead of going to the right, going to Donald Trump. I think at the time they made that kind of argument. So I don't. It's kind of like a ceasefire. Just, you know, well, why don't you come over to me and I'll take care of you instead.
Okay, can I just to interject a little bit? This is similar to some of the conversation we have about the 2016 election in which Hillary Clinton won the working class. She just did not win the working class among white people, and especially white men, in huge numbers, went for Donald Trump. Is it similar to what you're saying now? Is young white men, you're not buying that it's economic anxiety that's pushing them?
If it were that, we would see a lot more people of color being in the Conservative Party, and we don't. I mean, 2012, I think like 95-96% of people of color voted for Democrats. And you could argue that poor white people do not do as badly on average as a poor person of color. And that's the same argument Bernie Sanders made, by the way. I don't buy it.
Okay, and so I want to ask you then, why do you think young white voters, males, are supporting... they're supporting Republicans, and I don't mean to be casting the show in the direction of saying, well, they're all supporting evil. I mean, that's not the case. But in your view, that segment that's moving in the direction of what looks to you like alt-right or white nationalist are almost always young white men. Why do you think that's happening if it's not economic?
Because this movement, this alt-right movement, it's kind of the modern day rock and roll against the establishment. 15 years ago, those same 4chan people hated like the George Bush evangelical bloc. I remember this. That was anti-establishment at the time, so they were much more kind of left. There was still the ugly parts of that. There was still the racism. There's still the resentment, especially towards black men. And, you know, you see the that coming out in these days with the incels, a lot of racial resentment under there. But back at the time, the establishment was kind of that right-leaning, kind of centrist Republican evangelicals. And now that it's not, they've gone the other way. They just want to be against that.
Okay, so it is, in your view, sort of the anti-establishment, the counterculture, the break the glass and make everybody upset sort of
right.
mentality. Okay, so let me just briefly, you want to jump back in there, Jessica?
I wanted to talk a little bit more about the fear of other. I agree with you that we aren't necessarily seeing more white nationalism because of poverty. Just right before we had President Trump, we had our first president of color. In general, as a culture, we are shifting towards more, hoping to shift towards more equality. In general, we have more people of color, more ethnic minorities. White men are losing their treading. They're losing their footing as far as running the country and the culture overall. I do think that that is impacting not just young people, but our overall culture. I think that President Trump and white nationalism saw a huge increase in part due to our culture not being ready for a black president. I think that originally racism was built in as a method of control and economic inequality, but it's not the only part of the picture now.
Okay, and I think just listening to Jessica and Nick's comments, they should dispel any idea that people might want to have that, well, the alt-right is, I mean, it's not mainstream, but it's only a super, super, super fringe, you know, that there are, especially in younger populations, some very powerful ideas, you know, kind of bouncing around there, and that it's more ascendant than maybe some people wanted to sort of see. So that maybe the poll reflects some of that. We're talking about the new Reuters Ipsos poll that shows support among young voters 18 to 34, and we can call millennials if you like, for the Democratic Party has fallen 9 percentage points. And that's a bit of an alarm bell as we head for the midterms for the Democratic Party. Let me just real briefly ask our guests at the table, four people at the table, if you are getting surveyed today, I'll just go around. Jessica, do you plan to support Democrats in the midterm?
Most of them, no.
Most of them, no?
Yeah.
Do you plan to support Republicans?
No.
Are you going to vote at all?
Yes. There are some Democratic candidates that I feel like are aligned with my values locally. There are some. We also have some, is it Baxter, who's running for sheriff?
No, he is sheriff.
Oh, yeah.
He'll be here next hour. You can say hello to him.
Great. Perfect. Perfect example. I think if you're a registered Republican and running as a Democrat, like, we've got some issue there. I think in general, our generation has seen that since Occupy, that neoliberalism has meant that there is very little difference in the effect on policy if someone is a Republican or a Democrat. In the last national election, I did vote for Hillary Clinton, and it was definitely a vote against Trump.
Okay, but in this case, you would not say that you're enthusiastically hoping that Democrats win back the House in November?
I guess I am, yeah. I am hoping that they win back the House. I think more just on a local level, like I'm struggling with identifying with a lot of our local.
Okay. And do you call yourself a Democrat?
I'm registered Democrat, yeah.
Okay. Nick?
I am a registered independent. I did it at the time when I was 18 because I thought about it. I'm like, sure, I lean left, but it felt disingenuous to identify as a Democrat just because technically in my head I was like, you know, I would be willing to go elsewhere. I don't feel like...
It felt too much like team sports?
It felt like I don't think I deserve a place in the Democratic Party's table because I'm not loyal to them. Why should I try and kind of force my way into it? Okay. So I wanted to keep my options open. I remember the first year I could vote, I voted. It was a governor's race last time. I voted for the Green Party candidate because I hate Cuomo, which is rather strong. but I didn't like him at the time. I voted against him. That person did not win, clearly. He had no hope of winning. I don't remember his name.
Howie Hawkins. He's running again.
Right. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I knew it wasn't. It was a vote against Cuomo and the other guy, whatever his name was.
Yeah,
I would have
Rob
never
Astorino.
Voted him.
Right, yeah.
It was, I thought, if there's even that small, you know, Green Party vote, Cuomo's going to see that and think at least that many people are that far left, further to the left than me. And that's why I would do it.
Okay.
At the same time, I did not vote for Jill Stein because, you know, it wasn't as safe.
Okay, I take the point. So, but you're still an independent, not a Democrat.
Yes.
Okay.
But
do you want the Democrats to win the congressional midterms? Do you want them to win back the House?
Yes, and I would say the further from local you get, the less so. In a sense that locally, I'm in Letchworth. I'm in Livingston County, excuse me, Letchworth. So right now I have Chris Collins, who's horrible and corrupt, and I hate him. Also strong. So right now I want Nate McMurray to win. He's just kind of a centrist Democrat. There's nothing really inspiring about him to me, but it's such a local election that it's not like I have that many choices. When it comes to something larger like presidential, Senate level,
yeah.
Then I have a lot more options, and there's a lot more safety in saying I want someone much further to the left. Whereas in where I live, there is no hope of getting a Bernie Sanders.
Okay. Carolyn Hoffman, do you want to see the Democrats win back the House in November?
I would like to see progressives or socialists win their primaries over Democrats, and then I'd like to see Democrats win their races over Republicans in general, if that makes sense. I think Jessica pointed out that sometimes candidates slip through as Democrats that we can't support. But in general, I will be voting in every primary that I can vote in and every election that I can vote in, and supporting people who share my values. I stay registered as a Democrat as a strategic move. I feel like I can affect more change in that role. I don't necessarily identify, you know, that way. But does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so.
I also wanted to just make the point that we're careful when we're talking about people of color and poverty, that we don't just automatically lump those two together.
That's a good point. Thank you. Alex Tipolito, how do you, well, you're a Democrat, and I assume that you very much would like to see them win back the House.
Absolutely. I think that the Democrats taking back the House is of the utmost importance in terms of being able to actually hold President Trump accountable for the corruption and for his policies of giving, you know, tax breaks to businesses rather than working to increase the paychecks for the actual workers. And I fully intend on voting in the June 26th federal primary, the September 13th state primaries, and the general election in November 6th.
You're planting a little flag there for our listeners.
I just want to let everyone know that there are a lot of elections this year.
They are. Absolutely. I'm going to read an email from Tom in Rochester, and then I'm going to open it up to your phone calls, because you're hearing from four panelists who are in that 18 to 34 cohort of younger voters. We're talking about the Reuters-Ipsos poll showing that Democrats have lost 9 percentage points among young voters when it comes to preferences for the congressional midterms. Those voters did not move to Republicans. It's still 46-28 Democrats preferred by younger voters, but it was 55-28 2 years ago. And that just generally means, I'm going to borrow Alex's term, which is a good term. Younger voters are more likely to be party agnostic, and they're not really buying the notion of establishment politics as much as perhaps they did before. And what does that mean for Democrats? Well, the question is, could they actually lose some voters altogether, even if those voters are not identifying as Republicans? So we're talking about that, and we'll take your phone calls in a moment. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Tom in Rochester emailed this morning, and I'm going to go ahead and read this email, because it's trying to stir the pot a little here. So here we go. Tom says, here's the perspective of a Democrat who is not a millennial. I'm sick of them. When I was growing up, I kept hearing that young people were lazy, didn't vote, didn't get involved. So hey, at least the new generation is more active. They're engaged. But you know what else? When I talk to college students, man, they have the whole world figured out already. And they have no actual idea of how policy is made or how to create real change. They just know that they want change and they want it right now. And if you don't give it to them, they're going to take their ball and go home. Well, pretty soon they'll figure out that the world doesn't work that way. But for now, they're doing their part in making sure people like Donald Trump are winning elections. That's from Tom, a very pointed email from a non-millennial Democrat. Let's go around the table and I'll start. And this time with Jessica Fleming. What do you think? What would you say to Tom?
Well, Tom, I think in general, one of the misconceptions about millennials, in my opinion, and also, I mean, I've seen research to back this up, is that millennials are uneducated. I think our generation is better than the generations above us at determining, when we're reading things online, for example, whether or not something is factual, how to look for those facts. Occupy Wall Street had a huge impact on me as a voter, but also as an activist in general, and a lot of people in my age group. The relationship between money and politics and policy has become such a problem that I feel like older Democrats have been led to believe that change, progressive change, cannot happen. And we've been moving legislatively more to the right, and center has become left. Because in general, since the purchase power of corporations have really taken over our legislation, you know, we aren't seeing much policy at all supporting unions, supporting labor, supporting progressive values. Obama's legislation on healthcare was a great push through, but we didn't see much follow through at all on any other promises. In fact, President Obama really let most of Wall Street off with, you know, a slap on the hand after destroying our economy. So I just completely disagree that it's the problem is that millennials just want things to move too quickly. I think that older Democrats have just gotten complacent with things not moving left at all.
Hmm. Okay. Alex?
Well, I would say that, you know, I think there's a place for idealism in politics, and I think that that's what Tom is getting at, is that a lot of the young college students, the millennial generation, you know, they want things to change. They see policies that aren't working or that aren't working for them, and they want alternatives. They want public education that is actually affordable and achievable. They want health care. They want the opportunity once they graduate from college or from high school, whatever it may be, they want an opportunity to pursue a good job. And I think that conflating idealism with apathy is it's dangerous. But I think importantly, just as there is a place for idealism in politics in generating the large picture direction of where we want our nation to go, there also needs to be a place for pragmatism. I think that for so many people, their exposure to politics is watching CNN or MSNBC or Fox. Not enough people are listening to WXXI, who are covering the state and local political issues. You know, there's so much attention paid to Donald Trump and what's going on in Congress that not I don't feel enough people are paying attention on what's going on locally and how much more of an impact their vote, and their voice has on their state senator, their state assembly member, their city council member. These are offices that can make change, and they're much more accessible than a United States senator or a congressman or the White House. And so I think that there's a place for idealism, but that those people who are, you know, dreaming those big dreams about the policies they want to enact, to Tom's point, I think they should take the time and invest the energy in learning how that change happens, learning the process to select a candidate, whether it's through the local party or the state party, however, whomever. You know, you need idealism, but you need pragmatism about the way policy is enacted. And if you want to make that big change, complaining about the way things are now doesn't make a change. You have to get involved and make change from the inside.
This is pretty close to the Hillary Clinton argument. Were you a Clinton supporter?
I was.
Okay. I mean, this is kind of what Hillary Clinton, and at times a little in a frustrated way, responding to some of the push from the Bernie Sanders supporters, Hillary Clinton at times made that argument that pragmatism means small steps, means not massive wholesale change overnight. It's similar to what I'm hearing from you. Fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those small steps lead to a stampede.
Okay, but Jessica is saying, you know, that's the complacent view of older Democrats that you're sort of tired of.
It's the platform we could be worse is just not, like, working for my generation. I mean, The reality is that the small steps the neoliberals are making are small steps towards taking apart the New Deal. Mm-hmm. Those small steps moving in towards conservative direction. You know, we are making some small steps on social issues progressively too, but they're not even big steps. And since since those same politicians are also economically oftentimes moving towards less regulation, we're looking at a choice between, you know, neoliberalism and conservatism.
To that, I would respond that rights are won by those who show up. And the reason that we have a federal government controlled by the Republican Party right now, and the reason that we have a legislature that is passing laws to roll back worker protections, to cut taxes on the big Fortune 500 companies, is because the people that want to see those policies enacted, they show up and they vote in midterms, they vote in their primaries, they vote every single year. There's a big difference in turnout among party registrants. The Republican Party, generally speaking, has a much smaller deviance between their presidential turnout and their midterm turnout. With Democrats, there's a huge spike in the presidential turnout, but then we don't show up for the midterms. And that's when 2010, 2014, that's when both at the state and the federal level, Republicans win seats, and then they're able to enact that reform. So I would just say that I understand we need big sweeping changes, and we can't afford to consistently tinker around the edges on these issues. But we need to understand that in order to make those changes, to make those big sweeping changes. We need majorities in our our legislatures, and in order to win those majorities, we need to show up year after year after year.
Two quick emails, and I'll let our other panelists jump in. Rebecca says millennial Democrats are making the perfect the enemy of the good. That never works in the real world of politics. That's probably a shorter way to say what Tom tried to say in his email. Whereas John says, Evan, you've got to be kidding me. You have here a political party whose lawyer openly said they can choose their presidential candidate from the back of a smoke-filled room, a party that has pushed out progressives from top officer spots, a party that has decided to keep superdelegates instead of giving more power to its voter base, a party that is perfectly fine with negotiating away a social safety net, and they are wondering why younger voters are turning away? I've said it before and I'll say it again. If they keep going down this road, there is one simple phrase they will need to repeat. They will need to remember, lose, cry, repeat. That's John in Ithaca. Very different. Carolyn, where are you on this?
I agree with both Jessica and Alex. I understand, and I think Jessica knows this too, the more you get involved, the more the importance of voting you see. I think, you know, Alex makes a good point. We have to flip the House. I don't think any of us don't want to see the power in the White House checked by doing that. But to respond to Tom's email, I think there's a little bit of a lack of self-awareness in this sort of push to sort of vilify or demonize millennials. And in that, I mean, my dad taught me at an early age that every generation takes a little bit of a cranky note with the one before it and the one after it. So I think we have to have some self-awareness.
Can confirm.
Yeah, I think we have to have some self-awareness that the generation before us is going to be a little cranky. And so when they're critiquing my generation, you know, take yourself with a little bit of a grain of salt, knowing that this is kind of what we do. And the attitude, I don't know, is super helpful. Like, have you ever tried to talk to a 14-year-old boy that way? It doesn't work. And so I'd say, like, maybe mentor someone and kind of change your tone and see yourself in the scope of history that this is kind of a common thing that we do. The other thing that I was going to say is, I also agree that the youth are our idealistic moral compass. And if we can accept that and see them that way and use them that way, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think as you grow, you kind of learn how to vote the best that you can. But also, as a political strategist, I look at this and I say, okay, you've got a group of voters who won't vote unless they're inspired, and you've got a group of voters who are going to vote because they understand voting for the lesser of two evils and that sort of thing. So why not cater to the voters who need to be inspired, knowing that the older voters will vote for the Democrat and so on and so forth, whoever it is. And so I don't see it as a winning strategy to cater to older voters and lose the youth. Like, why not, you know, go for the harder to sell voter and encompass everyone? So there's just like a little bit of like political strategy there. And don't punish people for moving in the way that you want them to. If you know, I see youth getting involved, but it's not enough. Well, you know, it doesn't make people want to move forward, I guess, if you come at it from that attitude.
All right. Andrew and Arondaquit, we're coming to you in a second. And by the way, producer Megan Mack passes on this note to Alex's point about showing up. An estimated 24 million people under the age of 30 voted in the 2016 presidential election. And about half the number of eligible voters between the ages of 18 and 29 cast ballots in that election. That's well below the general voter turnout rate of roughly 58%. So still a lot of room to grow for what you would want to call young voters as a cohort to actually show up. Nick, how do you feel about Tom's email saying that as an older Democrat, he's sort of sick of millennials?
I think on one hand, he's kind of right. If you stay home, do you really have a right to complain? On the other hand, if you're not presented with the option you want and you can't reasonably vote for either of them, you're not going to. Now, I don't think any of us, you know, sat out last time, so I don't think he's directly talking to us. But for the people who did say, you know, the election was stolen from Bernie, the ones that stayed home, I don't think they can exactly talk in this matter. If you're willing to stay home, then you're willing to be silent. Like Alex said, your vote is your voice. So
I do think it's important to consider, especially when you're talking from a strategic standpoint, though, about the apathy. Like, if 50% of the population is apathetic to the vote, we need to look
the Democratic Party needs to look at inspiring. We need to look at the process. And I mean, I know most of the people that I know that don't vote, the first thing that they mention when they talk about not voting is the Electoral College. Well, why am I going to vote when my vote is thrown away anyway? I live in New York State.
So. Right. I guess what I would say is I think it's too much for young people to expect their options to be exciting. I would see that a lot where Hillary Clinton, she just doesn't excite me. She doesn't get me going. It's not about that. It's politics. It's your leaders. This is entertainment. They're going to be bland and dry because if they're not, they probably shouldn't be in office, as you see with the current president.
You want wonks and intellectuals.
Yes. That's why I like Hillary Clinton. At the same time, for Tom, who's if he's concerned that we're just being too whining, we're asking for too much. Well, that's how you get this. That's how you get people to go further to the left. So,
okay. So I know there's the panel wants to jump in a lot of the stuff. I'm way late for a break. I've got to get some of your phone calls in. Andrew, hang there. We'll come to you, and we'll take more of your feedback as we talk about what these polls mean for voting in the congressional midterms coming up here. So let's get that only break of the hour, and we'll come back with our panel next. Coming up in our second hour, when you hear the words Lyle Avenue, you might have an idea about a neighborhood with a reputation or a street in Rochester known for prostitution. There are real efforts to change that, to change not only the image but the reality. And we're going to talk about those efforts from a law enforcement perspective, crime, drugs, prostitution, and more. Changing a neighborhood next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let me grab some of your phone calls. Andrew in Irondequoit, first up. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, you guys, love your show, even though I don't really agree with much of what is being said. Hey, you guys, if you want to be, this is to your panel, I guess, in general, if you want to be homeowners and prosperous in the future, you should look at how people do that. And that is by owning a house and having a good job. And the way you do that is to not have a country that's overtaxed and overregulated. I think we need to get back to the basics of what America is, you know, what has been so great for America. And you guys are way off the into some fringe stuff by all this. You can't regulate yourselves into prosperity. It's just not going to work. I hope you guys would like to be homeowners, because homeowners pay lots and lots of taxes and they pay lots of bills, and that helps. You know, I'm a conservative Republican, but I am all for, you know, people paying taxes and helping the little guy. And that's where the engines of this country are, is homeowners. And to the girl that said the wealthy people are your enemy, they are not your enemy. You don't want to live in Brazil. You want to live in a country that is prosperous with lots of wealthy people that pay lots of taxes.
All right, so Andrew, there's no girls on the panel. There's two women. But I'm glad you called back, Andrew, because I wanted to get the opportunity to tell you that I know you called yesterday, and I don't think I handled your phone call very well, so I want to tell you that. And I'm really glad you engaged with the program. You and I happened to disagree yesterday when we talked about, as fellow white guys, about the experience of white guys versus the experience of people of color, like Adam McFadden on the program. We don't have to agree. I don't think I handled your call very well, so thanks for giving me the grace of calling back, Andrew. That's very kind of you.
You did fine, Evan.
Okay, well, you are a generous soul, so thank you for that. And thank you, Andrew. Let me turn over to the panel, because I know they want to respond to what Andrew had to say there. They're all jumping in with their hands up here. Go ahead, guys.
I don't think his remarks about paying taxes were particularly relevant to this discussion about.
I think what he's saying, Alex, and again, you all have plenty of time. I think he's saying he thinks you know, these are younger voters. Maybe you don't own homes. Maybe you don't have the financial burdens. And as you get older, maybe you will adopt more of his political philosophy.
So, Andrew, thanks for bringing that up about homeowners. It is interesting how many less millennials have been able to purchase homes than baby boomers and Gen X and other generations. In fact, we tend to have a lot of economic problems that other generations, boomers being the closest to us at our age group, because our wages are so stagnant and the unemployment rates are so high and so many people are underemployed. I think you know, I can't speak for my entire generation, but I would love to be a homeowner. The issue is actually that probably I'm guessing, Andrew, that you're a boomer, and there was actually a lot more regulation than there is now when you were purchasing your first home. We do not have a problem in this country of being overregulated. In fact, I think if you're talking specifically about any policy that would be in relationship to property, we have seen less regulation, especially when it comes to taxes and benefits of home ownership now than when you were purchasing a home.
Okay.
And if I could just defend Catherine for a second, she just kind of offhand said that wealthy people are the enemy. And whether or not I agree is aside from the point. However, just this past year, Rochester kind of had to do a song and dance to try and attract Amazon to come build here. Jeff Bezos is worth $126 billion, something like that. And all he can think of to do with all that money is to go to space. It's like, you know, there's only one thing you can do with this much money, and it's not pay your workers. And we wanted them to come here. That's the kind of anti-regulation that Andrew is asking for, and it clearly is not good for people who work there.
Okay. Rest of our panel want to weigh in there? Alex, any more you want to add there?
I just think that the proposition that we need to purchase homes and we need to pay our taxes in order to have a stake in the conversations about the governance of our country is a dangerous proposition. We all pay our sales tax whenever we go out shopping or purchasing goods. And, you know, I think if nothing else, then his call highlights the need to make sure that we are paying workers a living wage, that we're defending the middle class, and that we are expanding opportunity for everyone to be able to purchase those homes and participate in society like he suggests.
Carolyn?
Since I'm being characterized as the wealthy people are the enemy, I just want to be a little more specific on the facts there. So minimum wage hasn't kept up with the cost of living, and I would dare anyone with this attitude to go and work at Starbucks for a year and then buy a house. I mean, good luck. And Starbucks does better than some other corporations with sort of how they treat their employees, but it's still just dismal, if you're working for a corporation. And the value of a college education has gone down, hasn't caught up kept up with the price of a college education. And we also have this modern day slavery system that is prison. So I do think the wealthy so much of our wealth goes straight to the top. We have huge, huge income inequality issues in America, more so than most other developed countries. And I also just wanted to say the whole, like, you don't want to live in Brazil thing is racist. So I just wanted to.
Now, I could probably try to channel some of Andrew, because he would probably argue that if you work in an establishment like Starbucks, that maybe you're at a different stage of your life and you're not going to be buying homes. But I'm not going to do that, because that's a whole other conversation. What I want to stick with is the purpose of why we're here, which is, why did the Democratic Party lose 9 percentage points among younger voters, 18 to 34, in the latest poll from Reuters and Ipsos? And what Andrew is suggesting is that as you get older, you'll just wisen up and see that you need to be more politically conservative. But what the actual panel seems to be saying is the Democratic Party and political parties and establishments to begin with are not responding to voters who want the party to be more left, or at least some of the people on this panel. Maybe not all. And Alex, I don't know if I'm over generalizing for the panel or for the cohort of millennials, but it's sort of the opposite of Andrew's construction, anyway, from what I'm seeing.
I feel like that characterization is kind of the point that what I had mentioned earlier, that people kind of view the parties as two sides of the same coin. Both parties are part of the problem. And, you know, I think that the Democratic Party could do a better job of focusing on what they stand for rather than what they stand against. I think as we go into midterms and as we go into the presidential election of 2020, that if after 4 years of battling the Trump administration, voters know what he did wrong but not what the Democratic Party is going to do right, then that's a big challenge. And I think that we could certainly do with more emphasis on how are we protecting workers? What are we doing to provide economic opportunity? How are we lifting wages, and how are we providing opportunity for everyone?
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. I'll read a quick email from Ariel, who says, Democrats no longer even have claim to the tradition of FDR, who as a social democrat at least acknowledged that capitalism has systemic flaws that require, at the very least, systematic counterbalancing policies. After the neoliberal turn, which led to the bipartisan dismantling of New Deal-style policy and politics, there's no longer a viable political party that is even gesturing at an honest critique of capitalism. Democrats can't speak to that experience and, as a result, have nothing of interest to say to young people. That is from Ariel in Rochester, a stinging critique. This is Pat in Parenton. Go ahead, Pat.
Hi. I would just like to respectfully offer that please be careful about single issue voting, in that when the last election, my nephews voted for Trump because Hillary was going to take away their guns. And a friend of mine voted for Trump because her Catholic priest said abortion's not an option. So if you just pick one thing about a candidate that excites you or whatever, all I can say is please, please look at the whole candidate, not just one particular issue that you think has to excite you.
Okay, Pat, thank you very much. Anybody here in the room feel like they're single issue voters? No? Okay.
No, although I do want to point out that I actually grew up Republican and evangelical, so I can have a different perspective maybe on some of those single issue voters that we could maybe get into on a different show.
Did you feel like you were almost raised evangelical?
I was politically
conservative.
The only real thought I have, to bring it back to the subject of millennials, is during the primary between Hillary and Bernie, I do think that a lot of people felt very strongly about money and politics as a single issue because of the way that it influences everything else. So even then, I don't know that that's necessarily the same thing as a single issue of abortion and the single issue of guns, and that economic policies and politics influence everything else. But
yeah, I mean, I take the admonition. I understand it. I don't see young voters generally as being overly single issue, more than any other age cohort, I guess. But I take the point. Thanks for the phone call there, Pat. Paul writes to us and says, I'm an older homeowner. He's responding to Andrew's phone call saying, I'm an older homeowner and I see the need for regulation because I remember the deregulation of the Bush years and we saw a grand downturn. That is from Paul responding to Andrew. So I guess a lot of interesting perspectives, and I want to ask our guests for some of their final thoughts as we head toward those midterms. One poll is not definitive on where it's going for Republicans or Democrats or otherwise, but it is interesting. And I'll just go around the table and ask Alex Ippolito to start. You know, what do you think the Democratic Party or parties in general can do to be more attractive? Will we ever see young voters more attracted to actually signing up and saying, yes, I'm a Democrat, like you do? Or is that just not going to be in fashion?
It's hard to say. I think that, you know, in any generation, you're going to have 30-35% that identify as liberal, 30-35% or so that identify as conservative, and then the 40% or whatever remains in the middle that are kind of that party agnostic kind of feeling that they don't necessarily agree with the party platform of party A or party B, but maybe they're kind of somewhere in between. I think that the Democratic Party in particular is a force for good. It's the belief that government can be a force for good and can improve people's lives. And it's a long, hard battle to make change, especially to enact legislation and to make sweeping changes to the current system. And, you know, that takes, in order to enact that change, it requires us to show up time after time, election after election, and to continue to vote. Obviously, you know, the statistics bear out that as people get older, they start to vote more than they do when they're younger. And I think that as the millennial generation starts to, replace the baby boomer generation as kind of the governing generation in our country, that we're going to see those voter participation rates increase, and it's going to be up to the parties to offer policy solutions to the problems that individual voters are facing, like healthcare, school funding, all those kind of issues that people who aren't necessarily listening to the scandal of the day on CNN, but are dealing with at the, you know, sitting at the kitchen table, dealing with pocketbook issues.
All right, getting tight. Carolyn, got to keep it tight. Go ahead. Final thoughts. As you cough, great time for me to toss to you. Go ahead.
Well, I think we've had a great discussion. I wanted to elevate the voice of a woman of color that I spoke to last night, since there aren't any in the room. And she was my friend Renata, and she was just saying that, you know, there's this sentiment that, you know, what have the party's done for us? And whether that's fair or not, then maybe the Democratic Party needs to make a strong case to young voters, and particular young voters of color, as to what that means. And I think strategically, when I talk to candidates, you know, it's hard to get young people to vote, but it's hard to win an election without their blessing. And so youth drive culture and conversation.
I can't believe I'm hearing the music. The hour is up. We could have gone all day on this. And I promise as well, for those who are wondering, hey, you're going to have a panel of young conservative voters? Absolutely. We've got a lot to talk about from a lot of different angles, but this new poll from Reuters and Ipsos has us thinking about what it means for established political parties and what's in vogue and not with young voters in 2018. Our thanks to the entire panel. You just heard Carolyn Hoffman. Thank you, Carolyn. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alex Hippolito, thank you, Alex.
Pleasure to be here.
Nick Nevinger, nice meeting you here. Thanks for being here, Nick.
You too, thank you.
And Jessica Fleming, nice having you, Jessica. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Short break. More Connections is coming up.